Welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. His name, Jimmy Al-Daoud. This 41-year-old man was deported to Iraq in June, even though he'd lived his entire life in Southeast Michigan. He didn't speak Arabic. He had diabetes and mental health challenges. Here is Jimmy in an undated video shared to Facebook talking about life on the streets of Baghdad.
And I don't understand the language, anything. I've been sleeping in the street. I'm diabetic. I take insulin shots. I've been throwing up, sleeping in the street, trying to find something to eat.
His family and friends say Jimmy Al-Daoud died Tuesday in Baghdad. Edward Bajoka is an immigration attorney who is a friend of Jimmy Al-Daoud's family, and he is with us now. Edward, what can you tell us about Jimmy's death, how he died and where he was found? What do you know?
Sure. So my understanding is that Jimmy died on Tuesday and was found in some temporary housing that his family had been able to secure for him in Baghdad. The cause of death, we believe at this point, is related to his diabetes and his inability to obtain insulin in order to treat his diabetes.
How did his family get the news?
A neighbor who was in his in the temporary housing apartment that he was in contacted his family and told them about his death and that he had found his body that morning.
Walk us through Jimmy's life. Tell us, where was he born and when did he come to Michigan?
Sure. So Jimmy was born in Greece, in a refugee camp in Greece. His family had previously fled Iraq. They fled that country because of persecution due to the fact that they were a part of the Chaldean Catholic ethnic and religious minority in that country. And so they fled to Greece, and Jimmy was born in Greece. He's actually never stepped foot on Iraqi soil and has never been to Iraq. He spoke no Arabic because he was pretty much, aside from the 6 months that he lived in Greece, born and raised in the United States. Jimmy suffered from some mental health issues. He was a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. He was also a diabetic. His mental health issues caused Jimmy to lead sort of an unstable life for the majority of his adult life. He did have some issues with law enforcement. One of the convictions that he had that led to his deportation was a home invasion charge in which he was charged and arrested and convicted for having stolen tools from his neighbor's garage. So as far as home invasions go, not the most serious home invasion out there. So Jimmy's life kind of went along that path of being sort of a slave to his mental health issues and his diabetes. And I think both of those things combined to lead him to trouble with the law and eventually lead to his deportation and death.
And, of course, as we know, the Trump administration and ICE say they are deporting people who had committed crimes, and Jimmy was one of the hundreds of Iraqis who had those final orders of removal. When was Jimmy picked up by ICE, and where was he held?
Jimmy was picked up in June of 2017 along with a few hundred other Iraqi nationals that you had just mentioned. Jimmy had was originally taken to Youngstown, Ohio, where he was held at a private prison facility called the Northeast Ohio Correctional Center. And that's a privately owned facility that's used to house ICE detainees. So he remained in the custody of ICE from June of 2017 all the way up until December of 2018, when he was eventually released pursuant to an order from Judge Goldsmith in the Eastern District of Michigan, who was the judge presiding over the class action lawsuit of which Jimmy was a part of. Once he was released, you know, again, his mental health issues sort of got the better of him, and you know, he stopped fighting his case, stopped fighting his deportation. And again, I think that's a result of the mental health issues. The immigration court system, when it comes to people with mental health issues, is not prepared to protect these people. It's not built to protect these people. So in a criminal case, for example, if someone is found not competent to stand trial, you know, there are rights and there are processes and procedures and laws that are in place to protect people who are not mentally competent to stand trial. Those things and those protections do not exist in immigration court. Even if a person is deemed to be not competent, they are still, by law, put through the process and can be ordered removed and actually physically deported, as was the case with Jimmy.
And when was Jimmy sent to Iraq?
Approximately 2.5 months ago from today.
And was there anyone at all there for him? An attorney there? Any family?
No one. Jimmy, as I mentioned earlier, had never himself stepped foot on Iraqi soil. His entire family has been in the United States for 40 years. And he knew no one in that country. He was through the intercession of some people at the ACLU and through some other folks, was able to get connected with some on-the-ground resources in Iraq to help him at least get some shelter and get into a safer position than what he was placed in by ICE. He was initially deported to a city called Najaf, which is in the south of Iraq. Najaf is a city that has zero Christian Chaldean population, never has had any Christian Chaldean population. It's a city that is considered a holy city for Shia Muslims. And currently, there's a significant presence of Shia militias in that city, many of whom are sponsored by Iran and are very hostile toward Westerners, toward the United States, and toward people who might be affiliated with the United States, and toward Christians. Right around the same time that Jimmy was deported, the United States pulled their embassy workers out of Iraq, citing dangers toward them from the Shia militias that were in that region. And so Jimmy was deported not to Baghdad or not to the north of Iraq, where he may have had a bit of a safer place to go, but was deported, you know, right into the fire and the place that was the most dangerous.
Who chose that location?
ICE.
ICE chose it.
They chose it. They made all his travel arrangements. His family was not notified of any of this. The only way that they found out was when they received some communication for him from him through sort of a good Samaritan that found him and realized what position he was in and connected him to his family.
What was his life like while he was there? And particularly, was he able to have any contact with his family back here in Michigan?
So through that good Samaritan, and once we kind of found out where Jimmy was, the family was able to help him out somewhat. They were able to help him, again, through... this was a group effort. I mean, Heartland Alliance, ACLU of Michigan helped out with that, and some other groups that are there on the ground in Iraq helped get him out of that city of Najaf and into Baghdad, where they helped him. His family was able to help him to get an apartment, some temporary housing, while they figured out, you know, what the next move was going to be for him. And so he did have a phone and was able to communicate with his family via, social media, messenger apps and that sort of thing. But it was tough the 2 months that he was there. He often complained that, you know, he just couldn't get his medicine. I don't know if he ever was able to get insulin the entire time that he was there. He was, of course, deported without any supply of insulin at all. And so, you know, he was at risk from day one. We don't know why ICE chose to do this to someone who was this vulnerable, why he was so high up on their list. And maybe that's the reason, because he was so vulnerable.
I want to go back to that video of Jimmy that was shot in Baghdad. Here he is talking about when he was arrested by ICE. Let's take a listen.
Well, they just wouldn't listen to me. They wouldn't let me call my family, nothing. They just said, you go to Iran, and your best bet is to cooperate with us. That way, we're not going to chain you up, or we'll put you on our commercial flight. I begged them. I said, please, I've never seen that country. I've never been there. However, they forced me. I'm here now.
Edward Bajoka, what do you think about as you hear those words?
I think that that is exactly what happened. I think that ICE forcefully removed him from the United States against his will. I believe that he begged them. I believe that he asked them not to do this. I believe that he pled his case to them, and that fell on cruel, deaf ears. The ears of people who have absolutely no humanity and no compassion and no ability to discern right from wrong. This was wrong what they did. It didn't have to be this way. They didn't have to do it this way. And if you, as the video progresses, I think Jimmy, the video becomes darker, and I think Jimmy ultimately predicts his own death in this video.
Edward Bajoka, we want to thank you for speaking with us on Stateside.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.